Welcome to another episode of Tech Briefs Here's an Idea podcast. I'm Woodrow Bellamy III, aerospace and defense editor for Tech Briefs. On this episode, we have a very timely discussion on the use of artificial intelligence for aircraft maintenance and other data-driven use cases across the Department of Defense and broader aerospace and defense industry. As most of our audience probably has heard, on November 2nd, the Department of Defense released its new Data Analytics and AI Adoption Strategy that establishes what the agency describes as an AI hierarchy of needs and places emphasis on how the quality of data, metrics, and availability of information about military assets, programs, and services could be enhanced by a new approach to adopting AI, data analytics, and new software. The guest on this episode is David Mazar. He is the Vice President of Strategy and Growth for Spark Cognition Government Systems, and he provides a great explanation of what it means to be a full-spectrum artificial intelligence company, how their digital maintenance advisor maintenance tool uses AI to predict problems, prescribe solutions, and enhance decision-making for increased asset availability. So David, Spark Cognition Government Systems describes itself as the first full-spectrum AI company devoted entirely to government and national defense. What type of AI technology does Spark Cognition provide? How does it work? And can you give some examples of how your AI technology is being used or where it could be used across aerospace and defense operations today?
Yeah, absolutely, Woodrow. And thanks for the question. Maybe to start and to provide some background, because I think it's helpful in the context of the company, as well as what full spectrum AI means. But to start with the company, SGS was founded about 3 years ago when our parent company, Spark Cognition, saw the deep need for AI in the defense and national security market, as well as the unique requirements to serve that market. And so we were stood up as a dual use technology company, where we have access to and build upon some of the great technology that our parent company and Spark Cognition has developed in the commercial business and that we're connected to. So the reason we stood up a separate company, as you could probably guess, stems around those unique security personnel accounting and business model needs that serving the federal market requires. So, an example of this is personnel, right? We have, some of the smartest minds in defense and national security, as well as, the need to go to sensitive and sometimes secure environments to have these type of discussions. So bridging that gap is critical in this case. Secondly, you asked about full spectrum. So this gets to the heart of what our company was founded on. We're an AI first company, and we deliver AI through software solutions. So what does that mean? It means that no matter the type of data that a customer may have to bring to bear to solve a problem, so whether that be text-based data, visual data, sensor-based data, audio data, we have underlying AI technology. So whether that be natural language, machine learning, deep learning, even into generative capabilities, but we have that technology that can utilize the different and disparate types of data to help create models and software solutions that can help make decisions faster, reduce cost to operate, as well as manage key efforts, assets, and processes to enhance warfighter safety.
Yeah, that's a great overview. It's a really, kind of interesting concept to be an AI first company, especially right now. And I want to ask you, David, specifically about one aspect you mentioned there, which is maintenance for the Air Force, Army, and Navy. As you probably know, Department of Defense has been challenged in this area in recent years, especially back in September. There was a big GAO report about F-35 maintenance and readiness. But I want to ask you again about the use of AI and just looking at the main users who could benefit from the use of AI. When you look at the way the Air Force, Army, and Navy currently provide maintenance for its in-service fleet of aircraft, how do you see the main users being able to benefit from the use of AI for that maintenance? Where would they actually be experiencing the use of AI sort of in their day-to-day maintenance activities?
Yeah, this is a great question. And the reason why I love it is because it gets to the heart and the power of what AI can bring. So the quick answer, in my opinion, is AI can and should be impacting nearly everyone in the value chain of delivering maintenance to an aircraft. And to give a couple examples and real life examples, Our main focus on within DMA on the F-16 today is on flight line maintenance crews, which today, you know, to your point, suffer from a gap in experienced and, professional and people who have been in the job, you know, those 5-7 level maintainers. And so what we've done and what we do today with the maintenance community is we bring decades of historical work order information that has been accumulated over years and years of operational data that's coming off these assets, as well as having access to different data sets like fault isolation guides and other critical data sets where, you know, we can utilize our natural language processing technology along with, you know, advancements and starting to deploy things like generative AI techniques to provide correct, you know, things like corrective action recommendations to these junior maintenance staff. So starting to bring them along on the journey where someone who may not have that tribal knowledge of, you know, 5-10 years of maintaining an asset can start to understand and learn while they're on the job and be directed, you know, kind of to the right action to be taken for a specific fault that's identified on the flight line. And so we're saving time and hopefully resources along the way. If you take that a step further, you know, as we look at things like supply chain and, you know, the challenges that are faced in, you know, having the right part at the right time at the right location, as we include information, you know, from our supply forecasting data sets, you know, now we can start to inflow that information in the system, which can now close the gap on identifying an issue with an aircraft and understanding the inventory positions and starting to even get to predictions and prescribing buying and supply planning activities that end up decreasing the downtime of an aircraft while reducing overall cost of the supply.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I want you to kind of a follow-up question to that. Just to give you an example, a few years ago, I used to cover the use of predictive maintenance by airlines such as FedEx. And it was interesting to note that just, you know, going from sort of reactive maintenance where you're waiting for an aircraft to land and, you know, maybe that's when you replace a faulty part or address a fault in a system, going to predictive maintenance where, you know, a program is sort of automatically telling you to replace a part. It's kind of a difficult process for the active maintenance personnel. And, you know, I want to ask, can the use of AI tools such as Digital Maintenance Advisor, which you mentioned there, can they sort of be adopted with little to no training? Or are there new skills or even jobs or roles that are needed just to enable that adoption, again, of AI in support of active flight operations?
Yeah. Well, the quick answer I would give is yes. You know, and I guess the underlying rationale to that answer is that they have to be easy to use and aligned to workflows that are in place for those users. And so, in fact, I would say that point is one of our key tenets as a company and as we think about our solution. So our goal in deployments and like what we're doing with Digital Maintenance Advisor is for our users to really not know that they're using AI. And so you want it to be, you know, within the workflow and helping direct them and guide them without, you know, them seeing, you know, models running or anything else, right? It has to be a seamless connection to the workflow that they use on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, this means that our software has to meet the workflow of our users and conform to the processes that are in place today. As we think about our solution, and just to give an example on the defense side, you know, our DMA product supports maintenance personnel who are on the flight line. And so This means that we need to meet the form factor requirements in the environment. So in this case, it has to be, whether it be a tablet or toughbook, that meets the requirements of what they use on an ongoing basis. And one key element of this is, you know, as we think about directing them and guiding them to the specific, correction areas and documents that they need, one of the key elements is the fault isolation guide, where maintainers need it to follow certain flows within that guide. Well, our software is meant to help take them to where they need to be within a digital format instead of having a binder or flip page of where they have to try to look through and find it, where they have, you know, potentially, you know, different, you know, tools or, you know, greasy hands, whatever it is on there trying to get to the right solution. So I think at the end of the day, you know, whatever is deployed is only useful if the people that are using it are able to use it and want to use it. And so I think, you know, that's kind of the critical element. On the, you talked about new skills or jobs.
Right.
You know, I think one thing at kind of the macro level is I think further training around AI generally is needed. And I think where it's most important is a couple areas. One, I think, you know, from an acquisition workforce and from a, you know, understanding how we acquire and buy this technology, I think is something both from a software and from a AI perspective is an area where, you know, our DoD and federal workforce continues to grow and is learning, and we're all learning along the way. And I think we talk about things like using non-traditional acquisition techniques, like the CBR process as an example, or you know, DIU's done a good job of adopting this, or even things like commercial solution openings or OTA or other transaction authorities. These are things that I think can help speed the acquisition of technology and commercial applications that have a tremendous amount of potential, but maybe don't have the process or ability to go and deploy in a quick fashion within within DoD specific activities. One other thing that I would say in terms of skills and jobs, and it relates to adoption, is that I think industry generally, like SGS, can help emphasize things like responsible AI, explainable AI, and model development and deployment. And the reason why I think this is important is, especially in the case of explainability, being able to trace back to why a model gets to a conclusion that it gets to, and how it's, you know, improving based on iteration, on new data sets, as well as keeping the human in the loop and aware of kind of the critical elements. To me, that is one of the key pieces of connecting the dots between human machine kind of interaction, and, you know, starting to bridge, you know, the stigma or, you know, this, I think sometimes kind of, you know, off base assessment or consideration that AI is somehow, you know, doing its own thing or something along those lines. So I think those are a couple of things that come to mind, Woodrow, on, you know, what we can do.
And those are all really great and interesting points. And, you know, it's a really interesting time to catch up with you for this discussion, because last week, the Department of Defense, as you probably know, published its new data analytics and AI adoption strategy. In this strategy, they sort of outline a DoD AI hierarchy of needs, which the strategy defines as quality data, governance, insightful analytics, metrics, assurance, and responsible AI. And one of the most interesting things about the press conference, the Defense Secretary Kathleen Hicks outlined that, you know, this isn't really about, you know, new hardware or developing, you know, new autonomous systems. It's more about the data analytics and metrics and quality of data, as you mentioned, you know, in this new strategy. So I wanted to get, you know, from your perspective as a company that's providing this type of technology, how do you see this new strategy improving the way DoD acquires or invests in AI in the future?
Yeah, well, I think it's certainly a timely discussion because, you know, the document does, I think, lay out a good approach. And I think, you know, as I look at it, you know, you talk about what some of the comments that Kath Hicks had raised. The other ones that I think are important, you know, Craig Martel, who's, you know, Chief Digital and AI Officer, you know, I think one of the points that I really, you know, took from what he shared along these lines, you know, is that what we're in, the evolution that we're in today is one of exponential increase. And so if you think about the way things are changing within artificial intelligence and the progress that's being made, you know, things are changing on a crazy fast pace. You know, I think he said, you know, things are going to change next week, next year, next decade, and what wins today might not win tomorrow. And so I think the good approach and good perspective that both he and Secretary Hicks are bringing is that what this document, what this strategy, I think that, you know, defines and puts in place is some of the guidelines and approaches and perspectives that DoD as well as industry can look at, you know, and start to understand kind of what are those core tenets. So we talk about quality data. I mean, this is the bedrock of any good AI model, any good AI system. I mean, this has to be a part of it. I think back to a piece that myself and the president of SGS, Logan Jones, had wrote earlier this year, where we talked a little bit about how we increase adoption of AI in areas like JADC2, CBM Plus. And we kind of thought about it in four areas, which I think kind of align to some extent to the areas that have been, you know, outlined within this document. And the way we thought about it was kind of, like I said, in fourfold. One is unlocking data and centralizing a single version of the truth. And so this gets to the point of data quality, data governance, and being able to have data more accessible and actionable. And I think one of the underlying sentiments there is in industry as well as within DoD, you have to get past some of the challenges of data ownership rights, as well as, you know, some of the challenges that are faced, you know, within specific companies on this case. And we've seen it within the maintenance community on specific OEM data, but it can't be at the sacrifice of security or anything like that that impacts, you know, the end user in that regard. And so bringing it into a single environment, you know, enabling that data to be utilized is essential. The second piece that we talked about, which I think gets into what they're talking about in insightful analytics and metrics, you know, is defining metrics, but also kind of celebrating the wins that you have. And so I think, you know, being able to understand what results and what matters, both from a DoD perspective, but also from industry partners, and I being able to codify wins and losses is critically important. And I think the last thing that we talked about was building with scale in mind, but not as the priority, which, as you think about scaling initiatives at the outset, you know, it shouldn't be the top priority of scale. Instead, you know, thinking about building a foundation, you know, think about data as the foundation and building upon that with wins and successes along the way is critically important.
If you'd like to provide some feedback about this episode or even to suggest future guests, please email me at woodrow.bellamy@saemediagroup.com. You can listen to this podcast at techbriefs.com/podcast or on your favorite podcast app such as Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thanks for checking out this episode, and look out for more coverage of exciting new technologies on the next episode of Here's an Idea.